I like today's gospel reading from Matthew because it makes me work hard. Jesus doesn't make it easy for me to admire him in this passage. In fact, it would be very easy to slap some quick labels on to describe what's going on with his encounter with the Canaanite woman, like a newspaper with a deadline might do. Is Jesus a racist? Is he prejudiced? Has he, in fact, having warned the crowd that what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, just defiled himself and everyone around him by what just came out of his own mouth? That would be an interesting garden path for Matthew to lead us down. I went to the induction service for the Reverend Ken Sumner recently. He's the new head of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Christian Congress, which is the Indigenous arm of the Uniting Church. And he chose this story to be read and preached on at his induction service. For him, it is a story of hope and challenge. He makes an automatic identification with the Canaanite woman, the one who's been waiting for scraps to fall from the table, and who challenges Jesus to do something about it. Who do you most easily identify with in this story? So firstly, from Matthew, we hear about things that come out of the mouth to defile us. In this reading, it's interesting to hear the first thing that comes out of the disciples' mouths after Jesus says this. This is kind of what they say. Do you know what the Pharisees, that they took offence when you said that? No, whisper, outrage, shocked tones, delight. Let's, talk about this. Did you hear what they said? Guess what? The Pharisees are mad at you. Well, you're going to get in trouble. Do you know what I mean? When I sat with this part of the story, it gave me some insight into why gossip can be a problem. It may be that the content of the gossip is damaging, but in this passage, it also prevents the disciples from listening deeply. They get distracted from what Jesus actually said, and they focus instead on how the Pharisees react. And then they take that reaction back to see how Jesus would react in turn. And an important teaching starts getting lost under the possibility of an entertaining spectacle. Yeah? And as a result, Jesus has to explain it to them again later. Because they haven't spent time considering what he means. They've been stirring up a show. And so Jesus actually pulls them up before they go too far down that path. With some impatience, come on guys, let's focus here, they're blind fools, don't follow them anywhere, he goes back and he spells it out. The disciples need to understand, because if they are going to challenge the power and purity practices of the Pharisees and face up to their anger, they need to know why they're doing it and what's at stake. This is no time to take their eye off the ball. And so after the teaching is spelled out, Matthew tells us that they head down to Tyre and Sidon, Gentile territory. And everything the disciples automatically feel about what's clean and what's dirty comes right up into their faces here. And I was trying to think, what makes you curl up in disgust? Like, what would you least want shoved in your face? Something that would make you want to have a hot shower afterwards to scrub it all away. What would that be? So clean and dirty, it's not just about germs that we know about nowadays. Sometimes people and situations can bring that reaction up in us. And I think we have all sorts of cleansing rituals to rid ourselves of the contamination, yeah? I was trying to think of an example, what does that for me. And I came up with a situation where I might be hanging out with a person who might be making kind of racist or derogatory comments, and then someone else whose good opinion I crave comes along, and I feel kind of guilty or dirty by association. And perhaps then there's the temptation to distance myself from the first person or like run them down in order to kind of purify myself. This idea of being dirty, yeah. So this Gentile woman comes up. Now, she's not supposed to approach a Jewish male in a public place. So all sorts of rules have been broken right there. You know, strike one, strike two, strike three. She should be out already. This encounter should have got no further. And she names him. She knows who he is, the son of David. And therefore we can assume she knows the rules. and she chooses to break them. Now, there's some work that has to be done here for me to understand some of this. So firstly, my background and my personality make me very unhappy about breaking rules. And not just laws, but invisible social expectations that we have. Some people seem to delight in it, and they make me very nervous. Now, I don't think the Canaanite woman is in this category. Another reason to break rules is like a necessity, like so when you have to steal to eat. And yet another is as a form of protest to highlight the injustice of the rule itself. Now, I was trying to think of an example for this as well, and you may or may not agree that an example might be the recent protest in the city where people gathered to chant swear words in response to the introduction of on-the-spot fines for people using offensive language. Yeah. And the question is, you know, who gets to decide what's offensive? So they broke a rule in order to highlight the problem with the rule. Now, these are all the options, but I think this woman is desperate. And her desperation compels her to take action for the sake of her daughter, despite the rules. And she will not give up until she gets an answer. Now, to my ears, Jesus not answering comes across as rude. But the disciples are urging Jesus to send her away. And maybe not answering was less insulting than that. Has Jesus decided not to take offence here, as he was socially and legally justified to do? Yeah. This question gave me pause. Do you have the experience of choosing whether to take offence or not? Or is it something that just happens? You are offended and there's no rational deciding that comes into it. I hang out with some Quakers, and many of you know that they meet for worship in silence. And then sometimes people will feel a call to speak or to minister into the silence. And it was explained to me once that those who listen are required not to answer what is spoken, but to let whatever reaction they have rise up inside them and then ebb away, and they're not to react to that initial feeling or idea. They're seeking to listen to what God might be calling them to say and to distinguish that from their conditioned and more immediate responses or reactions. So I wonder what was rising up in Jesus when this woman was calling out to him. I wonder what he chose not to say. I wonder whether what happened next came because he waited to get past his initial reaction and listen for what God might be calling him into. So the disciples are there, they're on at him to get rid of her, but he doesn't. He engages her in debate. Could this actually be a sign of respect? I don't think public debate is so big in our culture in quite the same way, but the trading of arguments in front of a crowd I think was far more common then. And Jesus certainly throws down the gauntlet. He says, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." What will she say now? Can you kind of see everyone waiting? So she kneels, she names him as Lord, and she asks again. And again, Jesus comes back with, "It is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." And this is where we recoil, yeah? She has been humble, she is clearly in need, and Jesus insults her and stereotypes her in a way that places him firmly in a long Jewish tradition of antipathy towards Canaanites. Is this his own opinion? There's one reading I've heard of that says it is Jesus here who shows that he's a product of his environment, like we're all influenced by where we grew up. We might say that at this stage, Jesus knows no better, and it's the woman who opens his eyes and enables him to change and to embrace the other through this encounter. And I think that's a possible way of looking at it. But there's another way of looking at what's going on, and I want to say thanks to my mate Brian Luff for pointing me in this direction. The woman has an opportunity here, I think. By Jesus' responses, she is shown not as someone to be pitied or brushed off, but someone that Jesus invites to stand up and be counted. He is treating her as an equal. He gives her space to take up power and take up her voice in response. And she replies, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." At this point, can you kind of hear the crowd? Snap right back at you. Was this a demeaning or humiliating statement from the woman about herself? We might kind of hear it like that. And yet, this kind of attitude was probably no news to her. The only shocking thing about it is that she is holding it up in front of Jesus and the disciples and challenging them with it. And Jesus makes a total turnaround, commends her great faith, and he heals her daughter. Did Jesus himself make a turnaround at that moment? Maybe. Or maybe he was leading us, his disciples and his onlookers, into a new understanding in a way that would allow us to go on a journey of healing with him. Surely Matthew, who starts this passage by pointing out what defiles, has something that he's trying to draw our attention to. If we can get over the distraction of being shocked and outraged and just truly listen. I wonder if Jesus and this woman are sharing a sly smile together somewhere at how this encounter turned out. I wonder how much of the crowd they have brought along with them into a new understanding of what defiles, what makes us clean, and what makes us whole.